I'll bet you've heard of the name Mopar, but I'll also bet that unless you're a hardcore Chrysler fan, you really don't know much about it. Me neither. Turns out the Mopar brand has been used by Chrysler for well over 70 years. It's used to market the company's motor parts and accessories. In fact, that's where the name comes from. Motor parts, Mopar. But now Chrysler wants to breathe a lot more life into Mopar and make it as strong a brand as Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, or even Jeep. Sergio Marchionne, the CEO of Chrysler, brought in another Italian, Pietro Gorlier, to run it. And that's exactly who is the guest on today's show. Stick around. We'll be back in just a moment to learn how Chrysler plans to recreate the fifth brand in its lineup.
From our studios in the Motor City, this is Autoline. Here now is John McElroy.
So here we are in the studio with Pietro Gorlier, the president and CEO of the Mopar brand. Great to have you here on Autoline.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And, of course, joining us is Jeff Bennett from the Wall Street Journal and Eric Main from Ward's. Great having the both of you here, too.
Thank you very much.
Pietro, I'm fascinated by what's going on with the Mopar brand. I've been covering this auto industry for over 30 years. I've interviewed countless executives from Chrysler. I've gone to all kinds of media launches, new product launches. I don't think anyone's ever talked about the Mopar brand before. So here you are as the president and CEO. You're doing all these kinds of things. What I'm wondering is, what are the marching instructions that Sergio Marchionne gave you? What did he tell you to do with this brand?
Well, that's a great question. I think that there was the clear recognition that the Mopar brand is a brand with a lot of history, and 75 years of history. And in the last 10 years, it was a bit neglected. No, I mean, was still producing a lot of stuff, a lot of industry first, but was not really under the spot of the attention. So what we said, I mean, Mopar is in charge of everything is about taking care of the customer after the purchase of a car. And one of the main missions that we have at Chrysler is to improve and revamp the customer experience. No? And so naturally, Mopar is an important asset in this process. So the marching instruction is obviously to take care of the customer, selling parts and services, because, I mean, parts are a large part of our business, and taking care of the customer, giving the best possible experience when they walk into one of our dealerships.
Can you discuss Mopar's profitability? How important is Mopar to the company's business?
Oh, I couldn't wait this question. Let me say something. I think November 2009, when we presented our plan, our CEO was pretty clear in explaining that the mission of Mopar was to improve customer experience and being a profitable part of the company. If I'm still here after 2 years, it means that we are probably profitable.
You're profitable now, though.
But I was also wondering, too, in Mr. Marchionne's discussions with you, and in just bringing Mopar out as a separate brand, the thinking there was just, what, to put this in the spotlight? I know it had faded, as you had said, but by putting it into the spotlight, what did that do that was different, do you think?
Well, I think one of the main principles of our CEO is that when you have a brand, you need really to focus on the DNA of the brand. This is absolutely true with our other brands, Ram, Dodge, Jeep, Chrysler. Every one of these brands have a different DNA, so they are managed differently, targeting different customer bases. Once you have another brand like Mopar, with a large following of enthusiasts, you need to run it as a brand. You cannot just forget that there are hundreds of thousands of enthusiasts in the market. Actually, we have more than 300 enthusiast clubs around the U.S. We have 4 independent magazines, I mean, that we don't control. They use the Mopar name. We gave them the opportunity to use just to reach this large following of enthusiasts. So you need to be very specific in all the action that you do to be aligned with the brand DNA. And the brand, the Mopar DNA is adding value to our brands, both in terms of customer experience or in terms of providing accessories to expand the possibility of personalization of our cars and providing service in our dealerships.
But you're taking it to a level that I don't think has ever been taken yet before at Chrysler. And what I'm speaking at specifically is you have come out with a Mopar-branded car. You took the Dodge Challenger, did all these modifications to it, but it doesn't say Dodge on it. It says Mopar. Explain some of the thinking and some of the other vehicles that you're going to do.
Yeah, and that is an interesting story because you can find a lot of books about the Mopar cars. And I told you already once that when I came on board, my team gave me this bunch of books to read because they were afraid that this Italian coming from Europe, not knowing the Mopar brand. So I started reading all this book, and it is absolutely clear that there is an immediate connection between, above all, Dodge and Mopar. And people are using the two brands, easily referring to Mopar cars. So I said, well, we have a lot of Mopar cars, but no one of these cars, have really the Mopar logo on. There may be some sticker, there may be some wrap, but there is not the logo as the main. So I called Ralph Gill. He's a car nuts. So I said, what do you think if we take a car and we create a Mopar car? And then is when we conceived the Mopar 10. 500 units sold in a few weeks, full of Mopar contents, and simply reaching our enthusiasts and saying, okay, here we are again. That is a Mopar car, and this time there is also the Mopar logo. And then we went on with, and this is a car that is street legal, but obviously we have also the side of the business that is the performance side. So we put the Mopar drag pack in the market, 70 units. We dropped a V10 engine, taking the engine of the Viper and dropping the V10 engine into a Challenger for pure drag racing. Just
this
for the
is not
street.
For the street, just for the drag
This
street.
Is for the street.
And one more, too, if I'm right. Ram, the truck brand at Chrysler, has shown a high-performance off-road truck they're calling the Ram Runner. Is that part of Mopar as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. Another interesting story. We took the Ram and we started developing a kit. It started like what we can do with a Ram. No, we were going every year on the Moab desert for the Jeep Safari, and we say, okay, what we can do with a Ram? No, so having a Ram racing on the dunes, etc. So we started working on the suspension. Then we said, okay, maybe we need with the suspension and new fenders, new fascia, new bumper, something like that. We used the expertise of Ken Croker, that is a legend of the Baca 1000 race. And it came out, the Ram Runner. And it started as a kit, an after-sales kit. In March, we are going to launch this $13,000 kit that is moving the Ram to the level of a real desert racing truck.
What model within the Chrysler portfolio benefits most from Mopar? Are Ram customers most likely to accessorize or Challenger customers? What?
I think we touch pretty well all the brands. The most accessorized car is still the Challenger. We sell an average of $800 of accessories for every Challenger. I would say in second position they tie both the Wrangler and the Ram. They are both for different reasons. The Jeep Wrangler is sort of the perfect car for accessories, and we sell accessories of models 20 years old for the Wrangler. So it's great.
What components are most are looking at performance?
I would say when you move to the Wrangler specifically, we are talking about lift kits, half doors, different bumpers, towing stuff. Obviously, we have all the chrome insert that are still a big deal. When you move to the Ram, the typical accessory is the side steps, for instance, bed liner, And Challenger, you move more in the performance, so air-cooled intakes or vented hoods. And then you have all the other accessories that are not really related to performance, like floor mats, slush guards, or whatever. I mean, we are normally launching with every new model out of the gate about 100-120 accessories for each car. And actually in 2011, we are considering the number of vehicles that we have launched to put in the market another 1,000 accessories.
And are you finding that customers are getting that done at the dealership, or are you finding that it's now spreading that more customers are doing it themselves, kind of?
I think it depends from the type of customer. First of all, we have also the possibility to install some of the accessories near the plant, so we have upfit centers, and that is very important, because one of the key elements of selling accessories is having the possibility to display the accessory on the car or the truck. So the dealers can order, for instance, a RAM already with a bed liner in and having it delivered to the dealership. A lot is still at dealer level. The do-it-yourself is above all for the Wrangler, typically, where you have the typical Wrangler customer is a customer that every year buys something new. No, it's like of the some Valentine's Day gift, you know, for a Wrangler customer. So every year you add something. And in that case, there is a lot of do-it-yourself.
Isn't one of the keys to cracking the market of accessories is getting it baked into the financing of a vehicle? I mean, because typically if you're talking $800 and you spread Absolutely. That over a 3-year lease or a 5-year loan, it's not that expensive on a monthly Absolutely. Basis. But you got to get the customer and, even more importantly, the salespeople in the dealership to be able to sell it that way. What are you doing to try to do that?
Well, we have created what we call the headquarters accessory club. That is a club that the dealers can join, and where we give all the tools to the salespeople to be able to sell accessories to the customers. But you touched a very important point. Selling accessories is an art, because it involves three elements in the dealership: the sales part of the dealership, the service part of the dealership, that they have to install accessories, and the parts manager that needs to have the accessories in stock. So we work very close with these three elements of the dealership to realize and we have been pretty successful, because during 2010 we have almost doubled the number of accessories that we sell for every car. So this is both expanding the portfolio and improving the penetration.
That's another one of your areas of responsibility is customer service. What initiatives do you have underway, and can you give us a status report on?
Well, definitely there is an initiative that is has been launched by Chrysler as a corporation that is rolling out dealer standards at level of dealership. Dealer standards that cover both the sales experience, the service experience, and the customer care. And that is a great tool, because it's going the direction to the dealers. I mean, what are the best practices to realize in every part of the dealership to take care of the customer. The other important initiative is relaunch of activity in the service lane. We have relaunched, actually, because it was already existing, but it was sort of lagging without a lot of push, what we call the express lane concept. Express lane means having the possibility to drive through a dealership for oil change, maintenance, and having the service done in 15-20 minutes consistently throughout the day. Is an important and vital element of the customer retention process, because if you start losing the customer for the oil change, you not only miss the opportunity to sell other parts or accessories, but also you break the relationship with the customer in the first 2-3 years. And so when it comes the moment to buy another car or going through a major repair, etc., the customer has been lost. From the dealership is probably using an independent service, and this concept is becoming very important, above all in a moment where the quality are improving, the vehicles are improving quality, and therefore you don't have the customer coming. Thanks God for warranty in your dealership.
You've been pushing for Saturday openings. Are there Sunday openings on the horizon? What kind of?
It's coming. I don't know whether I'm going to be very popular for that. But my point is, first of all, let us address Saturday. I mean, when 1 year ago we assessed our network, we had about 60% of the dealers that were open on Saturday. That was at the beginning of 2010. That is not a number that is unusual among the official networks, no? But unfortunately, the independent networks, so all the other providers of service, are always open on Saturday and even on Sunday. So the conversation with the dealers was pretty clear. I mean, you are losing a large portion of your business, and it's not just the profitability of that business, it's also the fact that you lose the loyalty of your customers. And the best day for maintenance is Saturday. I mean, when you get the warning light coming out and asking for an oil change, you say, oh, let me have this done quickly, effectively, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, done. And the price is not necessarily even the first element of evaluation. So we started this conversation with the dealers, and they understood. We moved from 60 to 70. So at the end of 2010, we have 70% of the dealers open, and we are targeting 80%. That probably is a number that is starting being a good number, considering that you have some rural areas, some rural markets, or dealers that probably they cannot really afford to be open on Saturday. But then you have Sunday. I always say, and I already mentioned some time, I mean, when, as a European, and I don't think there are doubts with my accent, when you come to the U.S., the one of the best surprises is the fact that you come in the country that invented the 24/7, so that you can shop overnight, you can shop on Saturday, Sunday, etc. So why we shouldn't provide that same experience to our customers? And that's the simple thought, and that is true for Saturday, and then we will start addressing Sunday. Sunday is more difficult. You need some more investments because you need probably to add people in your dealership to allow everyone to have a day off. I'm not saying that we are open 7 days a week and everyone is working 7 days a week. You can have shifts, but that is the next frontier.
Pietro, I was at the Chrysler 300, the complete redesign of the car, that beautifully done. It's gone with a smaller grille, and I know that was kind of controversial because it was sort of the bling of the original model that really set the stage for it. But I was intrigued to find out that Mopar is going to be selling different grills on that vehicle. In fact, you brought some examples in. Talk a little bit about that, and let's start with what you're calling the diamond grill. Why are you doing these things, and talk about how you came up with different grills to sell for this car?
Well, first of all, you need to go back to the previous 300, a car with a great success, and definitely you cannot avoid to notice that the grille is an important part of the car, no, the front of the car. So what happened with the old 300 that had a square grille, and then Mopar started developing in the aftermarket other opportunities, looking at the other grills that were available in the market. So even the old 300 had three additional aftermarket grills, etc. And we sold about in excess of 15,000 grills during the life of the former 300. Mm-hmm. So when the new 300 has been designed and launched, we said, okay, we need to repeat the same experience. And there were, I mean, it was one a car where it was so common for customers to add a grill that you start thinking, oh, what is the best one? So finally, the brand decided to go ahead with the current grill that you have seen in the production car. And so we said, fine. I mean, we have a splendid opportunity to multiply the number of 300 that you can have, taking some of the grills that we had on previous models and creating new grills, even. So we started, exactly as you said, with the Diamond grill that is actually a sort of reinterpretation of a grill that we had with the previous model. And I brought the grills here because, I mean, we talk always about grills, so I said they are fresh from the supplier. They came out really yesterday, and they will hit the showrooms in March. And that is part of our heritage, and very, very impressive grill with is all aluminum casted. I mean, we
these are not plastic.
There's not plastic inside that grill, except.
Okay, and then you've got this other one called the 13 bars.
The 13 bars is a new one. So we said, okay, what? And this is was a specific development with the product design office. We went there. We started with, you know, when you talk with designers, always a problem because they have conceived, they have designed a car. So when you start saying, okay, what else can we do? Say, no, it's already perfect. No, but there is a market outside. That is one of the elements of Mopar. We have the responsibility to design and develop accessories. So we can sort of add something to what has been designed by the design office and the brand. So the 13, again, aluminum cast, a different look that will be is going to be really a new grill. And then we took what we call the mesh grill that we had already. It's the one someone is calling sometimes the Bentley grill. I mean, but this is a Chrysler grill, a Mopar grill. Again, a big success with the previous 300. So now we have up to six grills because we will also make two different versions of the production grill, one in black chrome and another one in satin chrome. So six. And the last baby, and this is a news, we are also ready to launch exactly the grill of the former 300. So we have decided to keep the same design of the square grid, so we will have a seventh grill.
Okay, if I'm a customer and I want to go to the dealer and have one, what would it cost me to have that?
The price of this grill will range between $350 to $700. I mean, it depends from the material, and we are about fine-tuning the price, but this will be the price range.
And I understand, too, from dealers we've talked to, that you're even going to go a step further when Fiat comes out. I've been hearing, and I don't know if you can confirm that some of these dealers want to sell wraps of cars that each time they come in, they bring their Fiat in for oil change, that they could change wraps.
Yeah.
Is that something that you guys are looking at?
Absolutely. The Fiat
we should explain that a wrap is like a plastic coating that you can put on
exactly.
The car.
Exactly. Well, you can.
And, it's like a decal. Almost.
Yeah. It's a decal and can move from being simply a stripe to be the whole roof of the car. The Fiat 500 is already one of the most accessorized vehicles in Europe. No? And Europe is less hot on accessories. No, I mean, for instance, in Europe, you don't have a lot of chrome on the cars, etc. So this is something that is. So and it is an exception because it's really a versatile car where you can really do different things. So we are obviously leveraging this experience of Europe, creating a line of 150 Fiat original accessories that we will sell in our dealerships. And among these accessories, there will be also wraps. So you move, again, from all the possible type of stripes to a flag on the roof, or as I'm always mentioning and thought was interesting, for instance, matching the wrap that you have on the car on your key fob. And that is something that has been created in Europe when the Fiat 500 has been launched. And that is really, I think, very cool, because at the end, the key fob, the key is sort of the ambassador of the car. No? It's the thing that you keep in your hand, that you put on the counter of the bar when you have a beer there, or on the restaurant, or your desk. And so why not personalizing the key fob? So the we have really a large gamut of accessories that we will launch with the Fiat 500, and the customer base will be, I guess, very, very excited. Mm.
And unfortunately, with that, we're going to have to wrap up the show. But Pietro Gorlier, thanks so much for coming on and telling us all about Mopar. Very interesting story that you've got here.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Jeff and Eric, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming by. And I'll be back in a moment with some closing thoughts. I'm fascinated by what Chrysler is doing with the Mopar brand, especially coming out with cars that carry the Mopar name. And the move to keep dealerships open on Saturdays and Sundays is certainly newsworthy, but time will tell if Mopar can really compete with independent service shops. I'm also interested that an Italian executive was chosen to revive the brand. Pietro Gorlier sure does seem to have quickly caught on to the needs and wants of American consumers. I definitely want to see where all this goes. But that brings us to the end of this show. Join us again here next week as we continue to give you an inside look at what's going on in the automotive industry.